Well, I was asked to come and speak to you guys about architecture today. And so first I want to ask a question. Actually, if you guys want to come up close here and sit on the floor, because I got some stuff. I wanted to ask the question, what is architecture? See what you guys think, what's your answer to that?
It's like design. It's like making something out of, like designing and making out of bricks, wood, stone.
Okay.
Yeah. The design of like a house or a building.
A house or a building. Anybody else?
A design of anything that like people use to go to or like live in.
Mm-hmm.
Design of it.
Does anybody have any favorite buildings or favorite architecture?
The Taj Mahal.
Taj Mahal, that's a good one.
Pentagon.
The Pentagon, that's a good one.
Pickham Castle in Japan.
Okay.
Your house?
My house?
The St. Basil's Cathedral.
Okay.
The Eiffel Tower.
Well, that's a good one.
The Tree of Life.
Tree of Life, that's a nice one.
The Forbidden Palace.
You guys got some good ones.
The CN Tower.
Okay, the CN Tower.
He's so well traveled that way.
Well, pretend it's not up anymore.
Okay.
Sears Tower.
Sears Tower.
The Washington Monument.
Excellent. Yeah, Washington Monument.
Lincoln Monument.
Lincoln Monument.
Empire State Building.
Empire State Building.
Jimmy Castle in Japan.
That's a good one.
Cinderella Castle.
Cinderella Castle, that's a good one.
You're all in Walt Disney World. Yeah, I'm thinking
the castle that, I forget what it's called. It's that castle in Disney.
Yeah.
That's Cinderella Castle.
Yep. Now, let me ask you a question. Has anyone heard of the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, Spain?
No.
No? That's one of my favorite ones. But...
Oh, wait, we missed it.
Looks like recess is
finally.
So, aside from what type of building or buildings that are favorites, my favorite type of architecture is houses, designing houses. And that's what I do for a living, is design houses. And so that's primarily what I was going to talk to you today about, one house in particular, which is my own house. And kind of just give you some insight into how I designed it, how I came up with the design. So I wanted to pass around this. This is a little thing that I put together with some houses on it from the last century, 20th century. These are all my favorite houses from the 20th century around the world. So you can take a look at those pictures, pass it around. And I also brought some pictures of my own house.
Ooh, looks like a pumpkin.
It is kind of like a pumpkin. Anything else?
It looks like it doesn't have one right angle.
There's not too many right angles in there. I try to avoid them. This is the front door here. This is inside the house with some of the windows.
It looks like you tried to avoid right angles.
I did try to avoid them.
Why?
Because the right angles are so common, I wanted to see if I could build a house without one just as a challenge to myself. So it was kind of like an exercise. Pardon me?
It's like an animal with a long nose.
Oh, yeah.
It's an elephant nose.
It is kind of like one. So I'll pass this around too. You guys can take a look at that. There's some more pictures of it.
How come you kept the door? Like, you could have avoided a rectangle by using a half oval.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you get the idea for making it one side bigger?
Well, I'll explain that to you. That's actually the first thing I was going to show you. A couple things here. One is when I'm designing things, I like to study shapes, and so I use all kinds of things. Like I use eggs. This is actually a wooden egg.
This is where you go every day?
That's where I go. That's where I wake up before I come here. And there's another egg. This is a stone egg. That is kind of heavy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, to answer your question about the front door, one of the things I did when I started working on the house, since I I look at a lot of different shapes of different things around me in nature and that type of thing. I started to ask myself questions like in the whole universe, when you think of all the stars and the planets up in the sky, and if you were to draw pictures of what you see in the universe, you get planets with like maybe moons around them and stars that are even bigger than planets. But they're all circle shapes up in the universe. You don't find anything other than circles. Or spheres is probably a better name because they're three-dimensional.
What? Asteroids?
Asteroids, that's true. The asteroids are irregular shape. That's a good one. You caught me. So aside from asteroids...
They're not square. No.
They're irregular, right? Yeah. And probably most asteroids are probably spherical in shape. They just break off into smaller, yeah, irregular shapes from colliding with other asteroids and that type of thing. That's a good point, though. And what I found interesting is that when you look at the universe on a big scale, it's mostly all spheres and circles. And then when you look on a real small scale, like if you look at atoms, do you guys know what atoms are?
Yes.
Where you have like an atom and you have like electrons circulating around protons in the center and neutrons. And those are, again, circles. And so on a large scale and on a small scale, circles and spheres are pretty much the primary kind of building shape. And it's only when you look at the scale kind of in between, the scale that we're at, that you get other shapes that come into play. And so that whole concept of scale to me is very fascinating because it depends on what size and at what proportion you look at things or you observe things around in nature. And so looking at spheres and circles, they always fascinated me because they're kind of that primary building block. And when I look at them, you know, kind of the way I drew them here, they're not perfect circles. Sometimes they distort and they become other shapes, like an egg. And that's why I was passing the egg around, because the egg for me is interesting because it's kind of like a sphere, but with like a direction to it, because of the fact that it tapers down on one side and narrows down. And so when I look at these things, I ask myself, I try to question and constantly ask questions like why things are the way they are, rather than just kind of accepting them as they are. And so this is a little clay model that I made, and this one was just kind of like looking at an egg shape and just carving into it and trying to see if there was anything I could do with the shape of an egg and just kind of like study it. And so I made a bunch of these. This is just one example of it. But a bunch of different carvings that I made and shapes. And if you look at that and you look at the picture of the front door, you'll see that there's some similarities there. And this was kind of like the early form of that front door that kind of evolved into that shape. We'll pass this around. Oh, thanks.
I thought, wait,
my
favorite
shape.
I did.
You did? You got a question?
What are the numbers on the bottom for?
That's the date, so I can keep track of when I made that.
You go to the Amish then to get one made like that?
Actually, that was made here by a guy in Bloomfield. But I work with the Amish now, which are very good woodworkers.
How do you balance the house out? Because it seems like everything is about to topple over.
And it does kind of have that feeling. That was kind of intentional to try to make it feel... Dynamic is kind of another word for that. It would give you a lot of energy to make it feel like it's alive, like it's not just sitting there kind of sedentary. So I'll get into that a little bit as I kind of go along here, but that's a good question. So the egg shapes, and if I could actually get this one back here.
Certainly.
Here's the door. I'll show you. You can see kind of like the egg shape of the door here, and I kind of carved into it. And what I was really interested in doing is there's been doors that are made with two doors like this. They're called French doors sometimes. And what I wanted to try to do is see if I could make a French door that was a little bit unusual, where the two doors were two different sizes, so they were asymmetrical. And see if also I can make the outside edges where they hinge, where they swing on a curved edge, because I thought that would be a little bit tricky to do, and I wanted to see if I could try to do it. And so this was, again, kind of comes from that little egg study that I did. And that was the first thing I designed on the house was the front door. And then once I did design that, other things came from that as the house went along. And so, as I was looking at...
Did everybody get a chance to see this one?
No.
As I was looking at these shapes, the circle shapes for the door, I started to study other shapes that were circles. But one of the things that really fascinated me is when you draw a circle, I noticed that like in when people kind of congregate or get together like this, there's a thing that's called proximity, which is when people kind of have a certain distance that they maintain between each other. And in different cultures around the world, there's different sense of what's comfortable for proximity. Some people are very close and some people kind of stand off at a distance. And it varies from culture to culture. It varies from person to person. People have different personalities that feel comfortable at different distances. And what I found interesting in designing a house in particular is that a house typically has a family living in it, which is usually very close. They know each other very well, very intimately. And so they have their proximity amongst between each other is much closer than if you were to meet someone on the street or a stranger. And so one of the things that I started to do when I started to study the house is I tried to break the house down into proximity relationships of the people that are using the house. And what I did was I broke it down into five basic distances. One is kind of like the general size of the entire house. So it's like the entire family house together as a whole. That was the first one. And then the second one is kind of like a larger space, which is with inside the house. And this space was kind of like the what's considered in architecture what you call a public space. And that's when you have a friend come over to your house or a stranger comes over to your house for the first time. They might come over into the house, and there's a certain part of the house that they would be in. There might be other parts of the house that are more considered private, and so they wouldn't necessarily come into those spaces until they get to know you a little bit better. And so this would be kind of like the public space. This would also be the space that when you have guests come over maybe for a dinner party or come over for a play date or something like that, this is where you would spend your time, is in the more public spaces. Then inside the more private spaces, you have another space which is kind of like your family space, where you might gather to eat dinner together or where you might spend your time together watching a movie on television or something like that. These might be more private spaces that maybe, say, a guest wouldn't come over to those spots until they became maybe a close friend. And then in addition to this family space, there's also then a smaller space that's more intimate for like yourself, like might be your bedroom, where this is even a smaller space that when you want to maybe get away from the family and you want to have your own space and so you're not bothered by them, you go into your bedroom or at nighttime when you sleep. And then finally there's a fifth space that I would come up with, which is even smaller. And that one is kind of what I consider like a space with like a meditative space where you might need even more personal time spent alone, where you can block out kind of all distractions around you and just focus maybe inward on something that you're thinking about or something that you're trying to meditate on or that type of thing. So these are kind of like five general spaces that I kind of broke a house down into, and it's all based on proximity as far as distances and space.
And how come the way you the public space,
mm-hmm.
How come it's way bigger than the other place? Is it just because more people need to fit in there?
That's all right, exactly, more people. You might, if you had like maybe one of your classmates come over, just one person for a play date, they might be in the public space of your house, and so maybe you wouldn't need as much room just for like one guest coming over. But then if in a case where you might have a bunch of people come over, say you had a birthday party and you had a whole bunch of your friends come over for a party, and so then you would need a much larger space, and so that space tends to be larger as far as in proximity and that type of thing.
I usually do for my birthdays outside.
Outside? Well, outside's even larger, so that's even better.
Yeah, I'm here, but think about it. Most homes, what's one of the larger rooms in the house? Called the family room, where you gather when it is that holiday or that party, that gathering that has everybody come in. Your bathroom, which is your more personal space, doesn't need to be that big, because it's, you know, personal and tinier.
So,
always, I might say that's how it sells different homes. People have different visions. For some people that, oh, you know what, I care to have more, a larger bedroom than a bigger kitchen, because I spend more time at night, you know, in my own reclusive place, then they're going to hunt for a house that has that more than that. You know, when I looked for a house, I wanted a larger kitchen than some homes offered, because to me, when we get together as a family, we spend a lot of time in the kitchen, you know, cooking, eating, gathering, in there. So it's all people have their different desires and wants.
So when I started, after I kind of like was examining this type of relationship in a house when we were working on our own house, I started out looking at shelves as just kind of an inspiration for how I was going to make the shape of the house. I mean, these are just ideas, but that doesn't mean that the house is necessarily going to look like this. And so I looked at shelves because shelves are these kind of unique things where there's things that kind of live in the shelves. This ends up becoming the house for an organism that lives inside a shell. And I thought that was kind of fascinating. This is kind of like a mobile home because they take it with them. You know, the house isn't stuck in one spot. But what was really fascinating is that when you take a shell like this and you cut sections through it, which is something architects do, they'll cut sections through a building, which is basically as if you imagine taking a giant knife and cutting it right through the building and splitting it in half so you can see the two sides. You get this kind of a thing in the shell where you get, this is like a section cut through it, and you can see the different size holes that are made, which are these holes inside it that just kind of spiral around to a real small spot here, and that's just the way the shell grows. It starts small and it gets bigger and bigger as the organism inside grows and gets bigger, the house gets bigger alongside with it. And so for me, this was fascinating because it dealt with this type of thing where you had these proximity of space and how you needed more space as you grow larger. And so I would take these little section cuts and I'd kind of study the relationship of the size of these to each other, the portion between them, and their relationship of where they are relative to each other in space. And so you can take a look at these. And then from that, I developed the floor plans for the house, and you can see that they kind of have circles very similar to the shell. Different size circles for the different size rooms in the house. Here's the front door of the house where you come in, and this is the more public space, the family room here. Also the private space, this space here that the family kind of gathers in. It's kind of two functioning. If we had much larger group of maybe strangers, people not as friendly, we might kind of spend our time outdoors like you did with your parties, because it's a much larger space than this. And so that's kind of how the floor plans for the house evolved. Here's another drawing of the same floor plans, but this one's got dimensions on it. This is the one we used to build the house from. So it's got dimensions and numbers and lines to kind of show you how to build it. It's got detailed little drawings here of how to build the windows and doors.
Nowadays, Mr. Schlieb, when you had your general drawing drawn of your circular, you know, positions, and you want your family room here a little bit bigger, I noticed your kitchen's over here and that so forth, how much of that then goes back to, like, does a CAD program figure out the mathematical aspect of it? How much math is involved in architecture these days?
Well, there's definitely a lot of math involved. And the CAD programs, like you mentioned, are great tools that have made it a lot simpler and easier to build and design with. This particular house,
I imagine how hard this had to be then when you're not sticking to right angles and easier.
Right. Oh yes. Yeah. There's a lot of angles and computation to calculate. A lot of geometry used in this, trigonometry. are probably the two forms of math that used most often to try to develop something like this.
You guys hearing that? So when you hear trigonometry come back up in your high school years, you're in 9th and 10th grade, you're talking, you know, geometry to you now means this, but you're going to get into a lot of hypothesizing and working in out theorems and so forth like that. Remember back to this conversation a little bit when you say, do I really need to know this, or how, or where, who, or when we'll be using this?
So when I was your age, maybe a little bit younger, I made these things. I don't know if you've ever seen this kind of thing before. And this is like string art, which was real popular when I was a kid. And you just put a bunch of nails kind of in a geometric shape, and then you string between the nails, and you kind of alternate as you go. But what's interesting is that the string stays straight. Thank you. But as you work your way around, you get these curve shapes that result. And so that was something that always fascinated me from as a young kid. And so as I started working on the house, I started to do a similar thing. I thought, okay, you know, if we're going to build this house, and we're probably going to be using straight things like boards, that it's much easier to use a straight board than a curved board when you're building. But how could you get a shape that would have curving spaces and curving walls with a straight board? And so this was a study model that I did to try to figure out a way to do that.
Another IO project. You know, I have these craft sticks and toothpicks. Come on, guys.
Here's another one. This was studying the curves, these curved movements and lines, just to try to give, going back to your question earlier about the house feeling unstable, to try to give the house a feeling of a direction where there's a movement of the space is pushing in one direction or another. And so as I was working on this stuff, I kept going back to the egg shapes. And this is another, similar to the model studies, this is a study that I did with a pencil and tracing paper. And I would sketch an egg shape, try to make a shape that I thought was a nice looking egg shape. And I would keep overlaying tracing paper over top of it and keep resketching it. And if the first egg felt like I should make it maybe a little taller and thinner, then I would do that. And I would just keep making constant overlays and overlays and overlays until I got to a shape that I really liked. And then I'd go back to a computer program, and I would try to mathematically figure out how do you recreate that shape through mathematics. And so here you can see this dark heavy line goes around, is replicating that shape that I settled on through mathematics. And so then this would be the formulas and the numbers that I would use to then go back and lay out the house with actual dimensions and numbers when we're laying out the floor plans. So I'll show you another. What's that? I think it was at one point. Here's another one. Does anybody know what this is?
King Tut?
No. He was doing the story on Egypt today.
King
Tut? No, it's a queen.
Isis?
I don't.
Nefertiti.
Yeah.
This was, this is a what's called a bust. It's a head sculpture of Queen Nefertiti's head, which is actually no longer in Egypt, but so I don't think you can see it there if you go on a trip. But this always was one that fascinated me, was because of the shape of it. I always thought it was interesting, not so much this direction, but more this direction. I always thought it was interesting how the neck kind of comes up this direction, and the weight and the mass that is here, but then it kind of comes back this way. So it has a very much of a movement to it in the form of the piece. And it kind of goes back to your question on the house feeling unstable. This feels a little bit unstable. This probably feels a little more stable, and this a little less stable. And so that kind of movement and that kind of energy was something I wanted to recreate in the forms of the house. And so I studied this quite a bit, and from that, I ended up with this sketch. And you can see kind of some of the similar relationships of the neck, back of the head, and even the top of the head, the way it slopes here. You can kind of see that in the roof of the house, as well as the volume of the shape of the house being a cone. It's very similar to kind of this shape. You can see again, here's the egg shape, and it tapers down, like much like a cone. So the that was kind of like one of the first, what I call motif, which then I took that and translated it into the rest of the house, and I tried to use this as a starting place to develop the volumes and the shapes of the rest of the house, and ended up doing then small little clay models like this. This is another quick study model that's just made out of clay. Try to study different shapes. Here you can see the entrance here at that time. We pass that around.
While you're passing that, can you talk a little bit about, so the kids have an understanding, you know, I know a little bit from reading your book, but the beginning fruition of this idea, you know, time-wise, where you are with, you know, going through all these steps, explaining, you know, the multiple years.
Okay. Well, I started designing my house when I was probably about your age, dreaming of, like, what kind of house I wanted to live in when I grew up. And nothing ever really, you know, I spent most of my time when I was your age. At birthdays, you would get maybe your least favorite present might be a new shirt or a new pair of pants. And they would come in a box at that time. I don't know if they still come in boxes, but they'd come in like a dress box, and that would have wrapping paper on it. And so I would take those boxes, and I'd take scissors, and I'd cut them up, and tape, and I would make all kinds of models and different things, and primarily designing spaces or houses that I thought would be neat to live in. And so I did a lot of that when I was a little kid, and about your age as well. And so then when we moved to Pittsburgh, I didn't grow up in Pittsburgh, but when we got here and we decided we were going to try to build a house, we went around and we looked for places to build, and we looked for a spot that we liked. And once we found that spot, then it was able to better visualize how we could have a house kind of respond to that particular location. This house that I'm showing you is on a sloped hill. It's not a flat lot, and it's wooded all around it. So a lot of the house kind of evolved from the fact that it was on a slope and it was wooded.
And everything that Mr. Schlub is right there saying, as that vision, that what he had a vision and work around as an architect, is really going to make a good tie-in to Falling Water that we're going to go to.
Oh, excellent. That's going to be a great field trip. I'm actually going there this Sunday, so I'm excited. Here's another little model. This was, again, studying different types of shapes.
This is
plaster, and it was studying a wall section to try to see how you could make a wall. And this kind of ties back to a trip that I took out in California. This is called Antelope Canyon. What's that?
I was born in California.
Were you? That's a nice spot out there. We lived out there for a little bit, and this is kind of a dark picture, hard to see, but this canyon was what's called a slot canyon. It had these incredible shapes on the sides of the walls, and this is kind of where this came from. Pass that around. And so, I'll show you, here's some other things that I kind of look at for shapes. These are bones from a spine.
What do the bones come from? Like, what animal?
I'm not sure about that one. I get them from all kinds.
It's from a human.
Here's another artifact. See if anybody recognizes what this is.
A rock.
Well, it's a rock, yeah.
Limestone?
No.
Flint?
It's a type of flint, but this is actually one that's been altered. You can see it's been chipped away at. The Native Americans used to take this, and they would chip the rocks to get a sharp edge to them, and they'd use these for cutting.
Knives and arrowheads.
Or like a tool to clean the leather, that type of thing. So, these types of things are interesting to me because it shows if you look at it, you can see remnants of things on them that give you clues as to what it was used for and where it came from. And so that really interested me, and so then I came up with this idea of taking clay. This is actually a piece of plaster. But it was clay at one time, and I took it and squeezed it in my hand.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated to see what, when you take your hand like this and you look inside, what kind of shapes and spaces are inside there. And so I wanted to create a model of that space and shape so I could then pull this out and study it. And I could look at the different rhythms that are created from your fingers, or I could look at the different kind of lines that are created from the cracks in your palm.
It looks like a shell.
It does, exactly, and it looks very organic, like a shell, something you'd find in nature, which makes sense, you know, because we're kind of part of nature as well. And so this then I would take, and I had a friend take it and cast it for me in bronze, which you can pass around. And this is a little bit heavy. But I wanted to kind of study the shapes, and I also wanted to try to incorporate them into the house. So at one point that was going to be used for the doors of our house, and we're going to try to make door handles out of that. And
you're so artsy.
Thanks. But going back, similar to the bronze thing, this is a stone that I keep on my desk, and this was one that I picked up a long time ago that I thought was interesting. Just kind of an ordinary stone, but what I thought was fascinating about it was there's a little bit of a bend here. And it would fit right into the palm of your hand, almost perfectly. And then when you wrap your hand around it, it was just like a, much like the bronze piece that was like perfectly shaped to my hand. This is not as perfectly shaped, but it very comfortably fits there. So I would, you know, I'd hold it in my hand at times when I'm working on drawings or working on designs, just to kind of like, you know, as a relaxer, because it's kind of a comforting feeling when you hold it. But what's interesting is that over time, as you hold it, it wears away at it, much like a stone in the water, as the water runs over it in a stream or something like that. So it wears it down and becomes smoother, and like over time, it'll become even smoother. To the end of my life, it'll be much smoother than it is now. Like maybe these little wrinkles in here will be completely gone at that point. But what fascinates me is that it becomes kind of a part of me, because it reflects me holding it all this time, much like the bronze piece kind of reflects me because it has my fingerprints in it from when I squeezed it, or the creases from my hand. And so those kind of remnants that kind of linger are fascinating, because for me, architecture, when it's trying to reflect life and the people that kind of live within architecture, for me, what's really most fascinating about it is those kind of residues or those remnants that linger back, that show signs of people living there, people using it. And so that's where these shapes, for me, kind of hold most interest.
You said life in architecture.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a dog print inside of a circle.
It does. It looks like a footprint, huh? So the people that have been holding the bronze, now that you've kind of held it and you passed it along to the next person, do you think that the bronze is still in your hand, or do you think it's on to the next person?
It's still in my hand.
You think it's still in your hand? Does it, your hand still feel like it's there?
It smells like it.
You can smell it too. That's the giveaway. Right. Smell your hand. You can smell it because there's a little bit of the bronze that's left the residue on your hand.
Mine smells like, I forget what it is.
Pennies
are
made of copper.
Whoa, this is heavy, and especially this part. Is this like pure copper?
Well, it's solid bronze. The whole thing is bronze. That's just the shiny parts are where we polished it a little bit, cleaned it up.
My hand smells like something, but I forget exactly what it, like, that is. I forget.
So that was basically all I had to show for you today. Now, I know Ben's father's got something he wanted to share.
Can we ask just a couple more questions? At least I have questions.
Sure.
So you've always had this passion, which obviously, you know, girls, boys start off, you know, your first toys. You know, the parents always laugh when people would come over with gifts and a child or a baby ends up playing more with the box than the gift itself. And then you move on to actually building blocks and Legos and so forth like that. And then people separate and follow their areas of interest. And some people, such as Mr. Schlube and those that stay in that field, are constantly liking that hands-on building, that creation. What can I make? Let me see what I could, you know, envision here and so forth like that. Where others go their path of whether, you know, they walk the path of studying medicine, science, so forth like that. But let's just point out, teachers started it all now. I'm just joking. But anyways, my question for you is obviously you went on and pursued this in college,
mm-hmm.
so forth like that. Talk a little bit about, you know, your just a slight background of your education slash, you know, how did you, you know, for you, did you, it was it nonstop, you always knew. I mean, we start this unit out in architecture with a writing activity where they have to write about what their dream house would
mm-hmm.
be. And of course, you know, I said some kids are going to say they want that basketball court right in the middle of their house. Some kids want, you know, swimming pool and so forth like that. And that's where, you know, when I was even talking about you coming in to speak, and I said to people how, you know, your book drew me in because it's just, I mean, you're a definition of a creative person because even your writing was so artsy and
mm-hmm.
how you designed your book and so forth like that. My question, even as a side person and reader, is you know, where is your wife in this picture? Because I mean, a typical woman is not going to be like, wow, a house shaped like this, living in this too. So I mean, she has to be creative and artsy even to accept it and go with it too.
Right.
So I'm wondering a little about where is her background in all
yeah.
this.
No, it's a great question. She fortunately when we designed our house. She kind of like had her hands off a little bit and she let me have a little free rein, which was nice because as an architect, one of the things you'll find is that when you work on other people's houses, that a lot of times you don't get to do a lot of the things that you would like to do as far as in the designs because...
I'd say that has to be hard.
It's very hard. So really, a lot of times the only time that you get to completely do everything that you'd like to do is maybe in your own house. And so that's why with my house, fortunately my wife was very nice and she said, you know, since you're an architect, you know, kind of have free range. She had three requests that I had to fulfill, which was far fewer than you get with most clients. One of them was that she wanted to live in a house that was not your typical house. So that was pretty easy for me to fulfill. And so that's kind of her role. But that was, even though she gave me that freedom, I kind of didn't let her off the hook that easily. So. I took a lot of her heritage, her lineage. She's an Italian-American, I guess you would call it. Her family came from Italy at one point, generations ago. And so I tried to bring some of her family's lineage, Italian feel to the house in the style, the materials, the way the materials are used, to try to recreate some of those feels in the house. Even though the house is maybe something you probably never see in Italy, the colors and the textures and the materials might reflect some of those things, and so there's a little bit of her that in the house in that regard.
Was it a nightmare getting the municipality and all that?
I thought it would be, because that's usually the biggest hurdle is the building inspectors. When you want to do something unusual that's not typical, or something new. Usually the inspectors are really give you a hard time with that. And fortunately, the building inspector that we had here was the best one I've ever come across in my career. He was probably more excited than I was with the house, and so he let me have a little bit of freedom with that as well. So.
And when you say this is your living, designing homes, do you do what you call more atypical?
No, it's the whole range. I mean, I do your typical colonial boxes as well.
Okay.
So it all depends on who's going to live in the home. My goal is to try to create a house that fits the family that's going to be in the house as best as I can. So if that particular family likes boxes, then that's what I designed for them, as a box. So it ranges the gamut. This one is definitely one of the more odd ones that I've designed.
You didn't see the other two requests from your wife on the house.
Right.
There were three.
Well, the second request,
her
she wanted a,
was bigger than his,
she like wanted a lot of natural light in the house, and so we put a lot of windows. We even put windows on the roofs called skylights to get a lot of natural light into the house. That was her second request, and then her third request was that after we got married and we went on our honeymoon to Italy, back where her ancestors were from. And one of the places we went was this island called Capri. And it's kind of a resort island people go to. And when the hotel that we stayed in, our room sat up on top of this hill, and the island is kind of like a giant rock that comes up out of the Mediterranean. And so from our room, we had a little walkout balcony that you could go out into the mornings, and they'd bring you croissants and coffee in the mornings. And you could sit out on this balcony and have the whole view of the Mediterranean. And so she wanted me to kind of recreate this balcony off the bedroom in her house. I couldn't get the Mediterranean in her backyard, but
you can't bring the croissants.
Exactly. So that was the third request.
Actually, yeah.
I can. You might actually want, by the time you grow up, then you might want to design your own, which
maybe
would be even better.
Yes, kind of
then
right.
So before I forget, I've got something that I want to give to you guys to take home. You can pass this around and take one out. These are cut shells, like the one I showed you, just to kind of remind you. So you can, it can remind you that to kind of like look at everything around that you see. Kind of don't take anything for granted. And then the other thing I've got is I made some paper houses for you guys. And these are kind of like origami. Does anyone know what origami is? This is a paper house. It's got pictures of my house on it. But on the inside, it's got instructions you can read, and it'll tell you how to design your own house. It's going to give you a little bit of steps.
Like mini origami hat house.
Yep. You can also use them for bowls. If you want
more
to put
house.
Like nuts in them or something.
Or a house for Lego people.
Yeah. Lego.
Okay, so the idea came as a young, pre-adolescent stage.
Right, exactly. I was probably...
From, truly to when you got to the point where you were drawing your blueprints to the time the house was built. How many years?
Right, so once we found the land, I started to seriously kind of draw things. Little clay oval egg that I carved into, that was kind of like, that's dated on there, but that was kind of the first thing that I started to, when I was looking at shapes, and this was before we found the land, and that started back when we were in California, so that was years ago. I think it was 97 or 98. And so then when we found the property in here in Pennsylvania, I spent about 2 years at that point designing the house before we actually started building. And then once we broke ground to build, we spent about 2 years building it before we actually moved in. So it was 4 years really kind of solidly. Oh, I almost forgot. This is a model that I made.
It has to be big.
It's
got
to be big.
Whoa!
And this is the house. This is what's called a scale model. So this is
impressive in itself too to make this.
This is quarter scale, so every quarter inch represents 1 foot in real size. And so this is an actual exact replica of the house. And also it's called a framing model, which is not your typical model. Like the clay model I showed you, the small one is a massing model because it shows the mass of the house. This is a framing model because it shows all the framing members of how you're actually going to build it. So you can see the studs for the walls, and you can see the beams that hold up the roof, and you can see the roof joists.
You can actually like take off the top and look inside.
You can. This comes apart.
Hard time finding a builder?
No, it was actually, well, I was the builder myself, but I hired the subcontractors. And that was actually the fun part, was finding them, because when I would show them something like this, they were either really scared of it and they would never call me back, or they were really excited by it because they wanted the challenge to try to do something that they hadn't done before. And so it's very easy to pick the people to work with.
My great-grandfather is building a house in Russia. He's about halfway with it. He just didn't get the water in it yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you going to go see it when he's finished with it?
Yeah, he's almost done. We're going to Russia April 15th.
Excellent.
So, I'm going to see it.
How did you cut the wood in the direction?
Well, I took what this was, I also was a study model. So this took a couple months to build, probably about 3 months to build. And I would work on it, much like what you do with like toothpicks when you make something out of toothpicks. I would take these pieces of wood and I'd cut them to length and to size, and I would kind of work out the design of it in 3D model form as opposed to on paper, which is the way you typically design a house, or on a computer. And so, yeah?
When you design the house, when most of it's wood, why did you put some metal in it?
Well, this was a room in the house where I was going to use actually steel tubes. And that was something that changed by the time we actually got around to building it. But at one point I wanted something, you can see going back to that earlier picture or earlier model, these were all made with straight pieces of wood. And so in this particular room here, I wanted to make some shapes that you couldn't get with straight pieces. And so that's why I was going to use steel, because then I could have the steel made and shaped to the profile that I needed. That I couldn't get with just straight. And I ended up foregoing that and just sticking with just the straight pieces.
And was that on the side supposed to be a ladder?
Well, that was how I was going to frame and enclose those walls, was to put the wood sideways as opposed to up and down in order to get the shapes. And so I'll let you guys take a look at this.
Yes.
I'll set it down over here. You can walk around.
What was the part? Was it your? I'm trying to think back now. It's been a while since I read the book. Was it your grandmother or your mother with the? Was it the ocean or? I'm trying to think about what you wrote about now that was one of your inspirations.
Oh right, my wife's grandmother.
Your wife's grandmother.
That talked about the Blue Grotto.
Okay.
Right.
Stuff we found.
So that was on our honeymoon. That was one of our.
The Blue Grotto.
Exactly. That from the bathroom. These are some scrap pieces. Here's a pool table I was making. There's a piano. There was a little when I was trying to study how to figure out how to get the windows and frame around the windows. How I was going to do that. So these are just some scrap action pieces. Exactly.
Wow.
Did everyone get one of the houses?
Welcome,
I enjoyed it. You had some great questions.
Do we still have a little bit of time?
Yes, you can go ahead and share.
How long do you think we have? Just for the regulator.
Four more minutes. So.
Four more minutes?
Yes.
Okay, well, basically, I'm not even sure we can. I'll try to talk. Okay, we're not even going to use my computer. As you see, and I don't need to say anything, this house is incredibly creative, incredibly different. And when I met Mr. Stuhl, I had the idea to make a piece of music that maybe reflects the house as it is. There are other, you know, instances. Maybe none of you know, but I'm a musician. I also compose music. I write music for different things. And maybe you know there is one famous piece called Pictures of an Exhibition, which is a piece of music based on pictures.
I think I get it.
But I don't think there's a single one. I think
can the children see your house from the road at all?
No, I have a lot of pictures. Want to see some pictures of the house?
I thought it was hidden.
Let me show you a few things. Maybe we all can check on the computer.
I'm more so wanted to say if they had any interest in trying to drive.
Okay, so basically, the house. One thing is to see the house here. Like he said, you know, everything is extremely interesting. But to go there, when you go to the house, and the first time he took me to the house, Ben was there, and there are different, there's one way, which is a driveway, you go with a car. But if you go there, he probably will give you, take you to a visit through a little path in the woods that takes to the main door, the great door that you saw. And that path is goes up and down, and it's all, you have to go on stepping stones. Really incredible stepping stones. So, can you see here? Can you see the computer? Does it work?
Take a look.
Okay, so this is pretty much the first view you see. This is the end of the street. It's kind of a turn around, the car will stop around, and that's what you see. One stepping stone here, and it goes kind of, you barely see. So you keep going, let's see, you can see. The next one you see, still around there. Start going, so you see a stepping stone, here's another one, you see. You don't really see them, at least with the vegetation, but if you there. Okay, let's put it to see a little bit, there's what do you call this?
It's like a motif, it's an abstraction of the house.
Yeah, which is right at the end, at this place. So this is the number. This is a portal. Is it a portal?
A gate.
It's all on the way. And then suddenly, the vegetation is not there, and the stepping stones. You can see them, and that's the path you go. You keep going up, and then you get to the highest point, and you see the house. Well, to go up and down, it takes too long. So it's great. The first, you don't even know. You're in some kind of mysterious place. You are there, and you don't even know where you're going to get, and you only see vegetation. You have to go to the stepping stones, and they're all very asymmetric, like the house in itself. So one stepping stone is here, the next one is there, so you step a little bit high, the next one is much higher. So my first idea to make the piece of music I was talking about, it would be kind of an introduction of the house, and I wanted, like the same way he used so many concepts that exist to build a house, what I wanted is to use exactly musical concepts to make a piece of music exactly made on the house. So since the first thing that I'm working on, and I have very little bit of music, is exactly this, the stepping stones. Matt measured the stepping stones, each single one, from the first to the second to the third to the fourth. And one is 3 inches. From the distance from the first to the second, it's 3 inches, then it's 14, then it's 3, then it's 8, then it's 1. So it goes all in different measures. So what I did, the first thing I did, you know music, when you go and make a measurement, and you have a measure, and you have a measure which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, right? Or 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, like you can dance to it, or 1, 2, 1, like which is a march, or things like that. You know all that, right? What
they
I do
now that they're recorder players, everybody.
Exactly, okay. Like it's only a recorder player. So I can close this. What I did is took exactly the measurements of this is the measurements you can see here. This is in inches. This part is the one that goes up. First is 3.8, almost 4, then 1.3, 32.7, 3.8, 7.6, so all different numbers. This is exactly the difference between one step and the next. So the first thing that I did to build the music is, first I rounded up all these numbers.
You can even use in math.
You see, oh, absolutely. And I actually use a lot of math for music. So first thing, I rounded up all these numbers. 3.8 became 4, 1, 13. This is in actually centimeters. We transformed the numbers in inches to centimeters. And what I used then is exactly these numbers and laid a track, a musical track. Let me see if I have it here. Maybe around here. Maybe this one. I cannot see. Maybe one side. Oh, yeah, no, it's not here. So, it's the other piece. And first, let me show you exactly what I did with the track. Here we go. Click track. Let's see. You see the measures here? Yeah, there's a better way to show you. 4, 1, 13. These are the measures. It's exactly these numbers. 4, 1, 13, 4, 8, 11. If you see exactly the music, it's exactly the same numbers. So this measure will have 4 beats. 1, 2, 3, 4. This only has 1. This has 13. So the length of the measure is exactly the length of how the stepping stones go up. So I have the rhythm. I have some kind of the timing of it. I didn't have yet. Let me try to play that for you. Maybe we can play that. It would be interesting. Want to listen to this? It's not the music. Actually, this is just the track. 1, 3, 4. Okay. You want to see how this works? There's a better way. I'm going to follow these numbers. It starts on a 4. Look at this. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3. That goes 11. You see? That changes right there. You see that? That's how I started. Then I'm going to put some music. And it's going to be very mysterious until when you're going to that place, until the first time you see the house. Suddenly you arrive in a place on the path that you see the house. Then you're going to have a musical theme that is the house. So it's the first time you listen to the music. Then it hides again, then it shows again until you really see the house. You understand? I don't know if you have time for that or they have something else. I don't know what your time limitation is. So, I mean, I'm not sure we should do it. Maybe I should come again sometime and show you more pictures and show them the music properly because there is a little bit of explanation to do that. What do you think? I mean, I'm here anyway. I can come back some other time. But that's the idea. So, in other words, exactly what exists, I brought it and I used a different music software.
To the house and
And it has a little bit of music, but I'll play to you in a more time, relaxed way. Okay. All right. Okay.
But you know what? It's a nice tonight that when Mr. Shami said he is doing this and maybe he could tie to it, I certainly encourage that because, again, you guys are young. You have many years to think about what you want to do with your life, but you can see how even careers and arts and interests can tie in together. I mean, Mr. Slew, obviously, you're gonna. I mean, you had a. Was your house part of the tour this fall? And that's why it was in the paper and so forth like that. But again, if you can combine it now and bring that into, something with Mr. Shami, that they mention again to expose people to more art and creativity, all the better for it. All right, you are a good audience.
Yes.
Hopefully, you've learned a lot. Please talk about this tonight at dinner time. Make sure you expose your parents to what you learned in gold class, what you heard and what you saw, and take a little bit of that with you to inspire you to follow a dream or, so much of your creativity. It's a proven fact, your creativity. Your strongest years are creativity, and from like 1 to 3.5, 4. And then from there, slowly but surely,
as you get out there and you get your questions answered, a lot of it also stunts your creativity and your imagination. And what I'm saying is you guys are here for a reason and in this class, because you can think outside the box, you use both sides of your brain in that. Don't let some of the outside world, as much as it, okay, you have reading, math, science, da da da, to close in on that creativity and that imagination. All right, have a good afternoon. Push chairs in, please. And we will see you. You'll see Mrs. Kralik on Tuesday for I.O. Now you have all these good I.O. ideas going for the rest of the year and next year when you have a new I.O.
That's right. That's right, I will have to.
And tomorrow, I'm
having
25 windows.
Excellent. There's quite a few. I think it's in the 30s. I don't know exactly how many.
See you, Kevin. Bye.
See you, Sasha.
Bye.